Luckily for you, the answer to the great question of life, the universe and everything is to be found in this podcast, A Worker's Guide to Everything. Sometimes cans, often bad language, always solid politics. This is the Trademark Belfast podcast. Listen out for Trademark regulars and very special comrade guests and fellow travellers talking all things lefty, Ireland and the world. We remain, as always, anti-sectarian, anti-racist and anti-fascist. Enjoy. Buenas tardes.
Hello and welcome once again to another Trademark podcast. Apologies to our regular listeners who, if we have any, that is, we haven't done a podcast in about a month. Combination of lots of travel, been really busy, also a dose of illness. I had the pleasure of having salmonella poisoning and COVID at the same time. Wouldn't wish that on anybody, but recovered now, back again today, joined by regular contributor Stuart McGill. And we are talking about fascinating subject of gold. And before we kick off and talk about gold's use in the economy and particularly in the modern era, I'll give you a bit of a background to it. Of course, before you pan for gold, if that's your thing, or dig out of the ground, or even buy it in the jewellers, which is where most of us get it, that's not its own origin story, of course. For that, you've got to go back a little bit further, back into a very particular kind of supernova, indeed billions of years ago, where stars explode, where gold is created. And then when it's scattered across the universe, some of which, of course, ends up on Earth. And I'm nicking Stuart still, hate me for this, I'm going to nick Stuart's favourite fact that he's told us a couple of times, I think, on this pod, is that all the gold we've dug up on Earth would fit just into 3.5 Olympic-sized swimming pools. So it's an incredibly rare element and subject matter, and yet it's everywhere. It's in your phone. It's maybe on your finger or around your neck. It's in the world's central banks. It's in our national museums, meaning, you know, millions of us are carrying gold around with us every day, some, of course, more than others. Some wankers have even been known to eat gold as gold foil on a steak or a scoop of ice cream. But, of course, Madame Guillotine waits for those people. But its main use, of course, historically, and the one we're going to look at, its role in the modern era is, of course, as wealth, whether as a status symbol or as a store of value or a currency or whatever. But why gold in particular? Why does gold as an element play these roles? Well, I suppose it's rare, for one thing, therefore valuable. But other things are rare that aren't quite as valuable. The thing about gold is also quite beautiful. It's quite shiny. People like it. Chemically, it's incredibly non-reactive. It doesn't rust or decay or corrode. And it's also really malleable and useful and easy to work. And we constantly recycle gold. People forget that. The gold's constantly recycled and rarely lost on purpose. It's not thrown away. It can be worked by, you know, hammering rather than having to be worked through casting, annealing or soldering or any of those kind of other processes. And so the gold in your phone could have been dug up and turned into a bracelet by the Aztecs. It could have been recycled that many times that it's still with us today, playing a very different function from one of a status symbol to its role in technology and in tech. But that also means that the gold you're wearing or using could have a dark history, a dark past in slavery or in mass murder. On the 23rd of September 1940, SS Reichsfuhrer Heinrich Himmler gave the SS dentist orders to collect the gold teeth from the mouths of those they were slaughtering in the death camps. And the SS from that point onwards, from 1940 onwards, collected about 6 kilos of gold per month from victims of the concentration camps. And we know from newly discovered documents that it shows that Hitler's personal dentist had about 5 kilos of that specific dental gold from concentration camps at his disposal for the treatment of senior Nazis, including Hitler himself, whose fillings apparently were made from that gold, taken from the mouths of the millions of dead in Auschwitz. Of course, most of that gold eventually ended up in Swiss bank accounts or other central banks around Europe and indeed on gold markets. So maybe that gold ring on your finger isn't from the Aztecs. Maybe it's from Auschwitz. That might dim the sparkle a little for you. But gold remains and it has a fascination for people, being, of course, a solid store of value. It's real. It's tangible. It's far removed as you can get from the kind of fleeting electronic phrase or shares of bitcoins or cryptocurrencies. When asked yourself a very simple question, would you rather have a gold ingot or one of John Terry's NFTs? If you can't remember what an NFT is, a non-fungible token, that's exactly the fucking point. And of course, gold's been with us for a bit. It's had a hold over us for quite a long time. The first kind of real modern historic discovery of it is actually from the Varna necropolis, about 4,600 BCE in Bulgaria, the Chalcolithic period, kind of the early you could call it a pre-Bronze Age period, or maybe a copper period, copper and gold period. And in that necropolis, they found pottery and flint and the usual obsidian blades, beads, shells, usual stuff, but they also found gold. And they've dug about 30% of those graves in Varna, only about 300 graves, and they've discovered about 6 kilos of gold. But it was there en masse. It was there in lots of the graves. And interestingly, one of the most important graves, the most gold was found in the grave of someone who they think was a metal worker or a smith. And you can imagine the power and the influence that person would have had over the rest of the community with their ability to work that particular material. And in Ireland and in Britain, that Copper Age or that Chalcolithic period was very short, that 2,500 BC to 2,200 BC. But it was characterized by the first appearance on these islands of copper and, of course, gold, characterized by the immigration of what they call the Beaker people, the people that replaced the Neolithic farmers that built new grains. And it kind of heralded the end of that late Neolithic period and the beginning of the Bronze Age proper. And the Irish, the National Museum of Ireland is full of gold in that period, of course, if you want to poke your head in and have a look at it. For those that want to know, all gold in the Republic of Ireland is a property of the state, by the way. So if you're out doing a bit of recreational gold panning, which you're allowed to do, you can't sell it. And any finds over 2 grams, about 20 flakes of gold, you've got to report it, apparently. But it's quite common in Ireland. And you can see that in the place names of Ireland, Tullyonore and Slievenore, the Hill of Gold, the Mountain of Gold. Internationally, Ireland has small reserves. The biggest reserve, of course, is still South Africa, where 30% of all mined gold comes from. The biggest stash of gold is, of course, unsurprisingly, the US Federal Reserve, which has nearly 500,000 gold bars. But that desperate search for gold continues. We have here in Ireland a really good and important social movement, the Save Our Sperrins group and other anti-mining groups, which has set up camp down in Tyrone on the Tyrone-Derry border in 2 caravans to stop the development by the US company Dalria of new gold mines in Ireland. The island as a whole, north and south, has been described, believe it or not, as the Wild West of Europe for environmental regulation. 25%, believe it or not, 25% of the land in the north of Ireland, and up to 27%, I think it is, in the Republic, has been licensed for mining, compared, for example, to 0.2% in England. And the planning application for the particular gold mine in the Sperrins is currently the subject of a public inquiry. Now, gold mining is extremely profitable for those who own it, of course, but it's also dirty, it's toxic, it's well documented throughout the world for poisoning water, air, land, and of course, people. It produces sulfuric, arsenic, mercury, cadmium, chromium, to name but a few, causes respiratory diseases, cancers, but it's gold, so they want it and they want to get their hands on it. Now, if you want to help those that are protesting the opening of that particular gold mine, there's a crowdfunder called Save Our Sperrins. Go online and give them a few quid. But now I want to talk to Stuart. I want to talk to Stuart about gold's function in the modern age, particularly gold markets and its role in the modern capitalist economy. So, Stuart, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks very much indeed for asking me on the programme again.
No, you're very welcome, mate. Wouldn't be happening without you and your brilliant contributions. And I know your contribution is going to be really interesting today because I know this is one of your favourite subjects in the world, is talking about gold. I finished off there in that last little intro just talking about some of the anti-mining campaigns that exist in Ireland, particularly in the Sperrins, where there's a big Save Our Sperrins campaign. And, you know, you heard the stat there that something like 25% of Ireland is licensed for mining. It's like, as I said, again, it's like the Wild West for fucking mining here. But, I mean, I've read a couple of articles you sent through, and, I mean, should we even be mining for gold? I mean, is there not enough gold in the world already? I read somewhere that about 8% of all the gold that exists and is being mined currently is like used for technology, because I know the gold has a use in technology, but the rest of it is just fucking jewelry or stashed away in bank vaults. I mean, can we not stop mining for it? Do we really need it for a modern economy?
Well, that's a really interesting question itself. Gold mining production has apparently remained quite similar since about 2016. See, all the easy gold has already been mined. And what I find fascinating about this is that pretty much every bit of gold which has ever been mined, because gold is chemically inert, it maintains its luster, is still around, still being used in some way. And also, all the gold ever mined could be fitted quite easily into 3 Olympic-sized swimming pools. So one of the reasons why gold continues to be useful is because it's always been scarce. All right. But right now, given the fact that all the easy stuff has been mined, the miners have to dig deeper to access the quality gold. So obviously increased challenges. The gold industry, I sent you something a couple of days ago from an industry body, make a big deal about how they've actually managed to make it more environmentally sound. It's still an issue. There is a case for saying don't do any more mining and just mine the bit which is needed for the proper uses of gold, as some would say.
Yeah, more importantly, because it is used in technology and modern technology quite a lot on computers and phones.
But silver is more important this way, mate. Silver is actually quite an important industrial process. And if you look at the price of silver, it's normally a sign whenever the price goes up that the industry is about to go ahead and expand. So it's a good indicator from that point of view. And regarding the green transformation, if we ever get such a thing, silver is quite an important material for that. So a little bit like, you have to be aware of all the stuff about the green transition, that an awful lot of the stuff that will aid that transition will fuck up the environment.
I've been reading about that recently, about that, the contradiction that lies at the heart of the so-called just transition as we understand it. But yeah, exactly. I mean, gold mining in particular, the point you made there, which is really interesting, is that the easy stuff's been got, you know. Yeah. You can go and pan for gold down your local river and you'll pick up a few flakes. But if you want the real stuff, it's deep down and it's embedded and it's hard to get at. And I was reading there that one wedding ring generate something like 20 tons of waste, and that's not clean waste, that's not just like rocks and pebbles, that's fucking all sorts of shit, because they use all sorts of chemicals, don't they, in the extraction and the processing of the gold. So it's a big question. I don't think there's a public inquiry on at the moment here in the north of Ireland about the gold mining by Dalrymple, so we'll see what the outcome of that is. But yeah, that's an interesting one. Next question for you is this one. Is, I mean, I looked a bit in the start about the history of gold, particularly as it's kind of, you know, as a status symbol, as a symbol of wealth. And as, of course, of currency, it's been used as currency historically, but it's also used, of course, as a standard, if you like, against which other currencies are measured, or, you know, like a standard economic unit of account is based on a fixed quantity of gold, or the relationship between currency and gold. And we know that as the gold standard. And it's played a really important role, has it not, in the development of the modern capitalist economy. I mean, it's been used a couple of times in the last couple of years, has it not, the gold standard, where we've had currencies fixed to a specific amount of gold, which means that, you know, the pound in your pocket or the piece of paper you carry literally has material wealth somewhere. It has some sort of value in gold. And that gold standard has been quite crucial, hasn't it, to capitalism?
You know, it's an interesting point, because I've just been reading something about Benjamin Disraeli, a very interesting guy. And Disraeli said pretty much at the height of the gold standard and the apogee of Victorian capitalism, he basically said, people think it's the gold standard, that all our wealth is a consequence of the gold standard. He said, no, a lot of other factors go to make up our wealth, and it makes people think the gold standard is responsible for that. There was always a lot of doubt about whether the gold standard was that which caused, or its success was a symptom of, that, you know, it has to be said, given its own priorities, the massively successful capitalism led by Britain in the Victorian times. William Jennings Bryan in the States was a big opponent of the gold standard, and he, remember that great phrase, mankind's being crucified on the cross of iron. There is also this idea that Britain, Europe, America enjoyed some massive golden age of expansion in which everybody was happy. This is largely bollocks. Gold was a problem from many points of view. When you look at that great book by George Dangerfield, The Strange Death of Liberal England, 1910 to 1914, he talks there about the massive crises there were, which were engulfing Britain at that time. And that was the height of Britain's wealth and Britain's empire to a large extent. A lot of people were very poor. And part of that was the consequence of the gold standard, because it limited, because your currency is tied to gold, it limited your ability to adjust towards fuck-ups.
And yeah, that's the crucial bit here, isn't it, is that when you tie your currency to gold, it limits the amount of money that you can create to circulate around your economy.
Exactly. And another historical example here, and this one's actually, I think, genuinely quite interesting, but hell, I don't have many friends. This is the nearest thing I get to a social life. 1796, Napoleon issued a little invasion of Fishguard for reasons nobody's really clear. This caused a major crisis in Britain. It's a little bit like the 98 invasion of Ireland. A small group of people came in there, massive crisis in there. People started withdrawing gold from everywhere. French people that had put their gold into the UK for safekeeping, they took it back to France because they felt it was safer there. So they took, basically, they took sterling off the gold standard. You could no longer go to the bank and exchange your paper money for gold. Now, this led to a big crisis. It led to a crisis in the mind of many people. People like David Ricardo was outraged about this. Bullion Committee was formed and they said, we have to get back to a gold standard at some point soon. The government ignored them because at the time, the priority was to basically spend money on food, arms and uniforms to fight what was a major European civil war. Now, they didn't go back in the gold standard until 1821. They defeated Napoleon in 1815, but because of a crisis in Latin America at the time, there was a problem with the supply of gold, so that convertibility didn't exist. So this idea that our modern times are unique because 1971, we haven't had a direct connection with the value of a currency to the price of gold.
It's, I mean, the gold standards come in and come out because they got on, they're back on it again in the 1820s, they left it in the 1870s, they went back on it again. And I know they left it again in the 1830s after 1929. Was there something about Roosevelt wanting to leave the gold standard in the United States? Because he understood that if during the crisis, of course, after the Great Wall Street crash, that if they stayed on the gold standard, it would literally limit his ability to create the money that he needed to invest in that economy that had crashed. So they left the gold standard precisely because, or did he? I mean, they must have understood that that meant they moved from commodified money, i.e. convertible money, towards fiat money. This idea you could just print cash, therefore, rebuild.
What Roosevelt basically did, and it's a very interesting wee history here, Sam, we haven't got more time to go through it, but Roosevelt basically did was recognize that there was a big run on gold. People were going to the bank and they're taking out gold. So he basically stopped people from doing that, and he requisitioned a significant amount of gold. Now, in 1930...
Did he basically nationalize gold in the US?
Basically, that's it. That's one of the reasons why America has so much gold in Fort Knox. He took over people's gold. That's it, right? You give it to us, it will stay here. And so you couldn't have a run on gold anymore. Now, he said in 1934, he fixed the price of gold. I think it was $35 an ounce, something like that. A price which actually maintained, that dollar to gold per ounce price was maintained until 1971, when Nixon ended the relationship between the dollar and the price of gold. So that was a quite extraordinary time in history, because America is liberal capitalist until it suits them, and Roosevelt realized this was not working, so basically they took over gold.
Yeah, and of course you mentioned already the Nixon 1971 Nixon, when, I mean, we've talked about it on previous podcasts, when after the Second World War and the great, you know, US boom and the rebuilding of Europe and the American economic boom, that more dollars ended up outside America than was in America. But because of the convertibility agreement to gold, people could literally go to the Federal Reserve or Fort Knox in the States and go, I've got $1 billion worth of US cash. I would like to convert it for gold ingots, please. And the Americans were shitting themselves that they didn't have enough gold, basically, in their reserves to guarantee the convertibility of dollars. And people were trying, weren't they? People were threatening to say, to go to the States. So, well, actually, we want to give you your dollars back, but we'd like some gold in return. And because of that, Nixon broke the link between the gold and the dollar in 1971, right in the middle of the Vietnam War. I mean, that was a pretty paradigm shifting decision, wasn't it?
It was a massive decision. It was something they were forced into because they had massive social program at the time. People like De Gaulle were actually sending people across there to ship the gold back to France, because he was never happy with France not being the number one nation, for one thing. And he was also very dubious about the role of the dollar as the dominant currency post-World War II. And it wasn't just De Gaulle, to be honest, mate. There was a bunch of people called the gold bugs who were speculators who continually tried to increase the price of gold so it would screw up the system and make some money out of it. And basically, the central banks defended that price until Nixon broke that relationship. And then there was no longer any backup, and the price of gold was allowed to rise. And it wasn't until 1976 that particular gold standard was dropped completely. And since then, we've had no relationship between currencies to the price of gold or to the
amount. I mean, the other thing it did lots of different things, of course, but it radically changed the world of money. It radically changed the nature of capitalism in 1971 and the break with gold. I mean, currency trading in 1971 was hardly existed. And by 1974, it was twice the size of the actual trade in goods on the planet. So it led to this massive speculative boom practically overnight in the West as well, didn't it? I mean, and it signaled also the end of the Keynesian model. And it kind of signaled the introduction of, I suppose, monetarism and neoliberalism, which led, of course, to the crash of 2008. So it's a massive, the end of the gold standard had a huge impact, didn't it? So it's fascinating to me to try and understand the long-term impact of the end of the link between the dollar and gold. And then, of course, other currencies linked to the dollar. And of course, that's one of the reasons why I think they failed to explain or understand 2008, the global financial crash, because one of the things that doesn't exist in modern economists' models of how the world works is money, banking, debt. And here you have this entire world system almost creating as much money as they want because it's not linked to anything. It's just fiat money. It's decommodified money. It has no link to an actual, real, tangible element. And that was part, wasn't it, in a sense of the expansion of debt, the expansion of trading and debt right up in the noughties up to 2008.
Yeah, I think the expansion of debt was controlled certainly in the immediate post-war years through various government controls. Like banks had to keep something like 12.5% of the reserves in liquid form. And it wasn't really until the 1970s that when the Heath government came in that banks here were able to expand their money supply, well, to expand their lending and therefore money supply significantly. So there was a whole range of factors coming here. It wasn't just down to the abandonment of the gold standard in 71 because remember, people felt that throughout the 1990s and the early part of this century, the Great Moderation, that the gold standard existed with people like Alan Greenspan. They were the ones that were controlling everything which was happening, and they were keeping things moving on nice and slowly, not overly expanding the money supply. Because remember,
that's an interesting point you make there. Actually, I like that. The idea that you didn't need a link between the dollar and gold when you had such a powerful Federal Reserve deciding what the policy would be on money creation and money circulation globally. So they acted almost like a gold standard. It's a bit like you said earlier on, we don't have a gold standard in Europe, but the euro kind of acts like a gold standard, doesn't it, Stuart, in a kind of a way? Because it pegs all of those eurozone currencies, which officially no longer exist, but those, you know, two, if you like, the euro.
One of the appeals of the gold standard over the years, particularly to people of a right-wing anti-government persuasion, is that it keeps the politics out of economics. It's what you can do is limited by the amount of gold you have. And there's an adjustment mechanism, which means that if, like what happened to Britain, all right, in the immediate post-war years, they weren't selling very much stuff, but they had to maintain the price of the currency in relation to gold. So they raised interest rates to attract more money, to attract more gold into the economy. It put 1 million people unemployed virtually overnight in 1920. Montague Norman, the guy in charge of the Bank of England, he didn't give a toss. He had an almost kind of religious veneration towards gold and the gold standard. And he said his job, right, was not unemployment. That was the government's job. His job was to actually make sure that there was plenty of gold in the Bank of England's vaults. Remember, in those days, the Bank of England was not nationalized. It was a private institution. We'll talk about the similarities between those days and others later.
The thing about getting rid of the gold standard, then, if we say that the Federal Reserve and the control that the United States has over money creation and money supply and policy, if you like, is almost like having a gold reserve. And if we say the euro is almost like having a gold standard, and the euro is almost like a gold standard, what's the reason for not having a gold standard then? Is it just that this system is more flexible and allows for greater expansion in terms of money supply?
Yeah, if you have a problem, then you can actually depreciate your currency. What should have happened in the 1920s with Britain, right? You have a problem with your exports become less competitive. So then you allow your currency to depreciate. That means your exports become competitive. Your people are less inclined to buy more imports. Therefore, your balance of payments adjusts. If you have a fixed exchange rate, like what's happening now, say, with the French and the Belgians, say, they were getting very pissed off before 2008 with the fact that the Germans were undercutting them. The Germans were basically wage dumping. Now, in the old days, the Germans were actually wage cutting because they agreed with the unions in the early part of the century after the dot-com boom, which basically collapsed and fucked up the Germans big time, they would keep wages nice and low, and they would export lead their way to recovery. This fucked up the French and the Belgians, not just people down the south. In the old days, there would have been an adjustment in the value of Deutschmark. It would have become higher, and therefore the French and the Belgians, their currency would have become more competitive against the Deutschmark, and they could have recovered. When you have a fixed exchange rate, you don't have that automatic adjustment mechanism. Also, with the French and the Belgians, they were unable to compete with the Germans by that currency depreciation, so they were reduced to
So it stops competition between states within the Eurozone in that sense, like aggressive competition, economic competition, but it allows Germany to do what the fuck it wants.
Well, you could say that a large part of the current European Union is dedicated towards Germany becoming successful in Europe. Yeah. All right, because it's a dominant economy, no doubt that. It's fucking huge. And the Germans were very keen on Europe because they had that vague obsession against inflation, and they felt that if we have a European Union, a euro, and a Bundesbank, sorry, a European Central Bank, which is effectively the Bundesbank writ large with Bundesbank discipline, then you will control inflation in Europe.
Yeah, the other thing I wanted to ask you, I've asked you this question before, I'm going to ask it again, is that there's no gold standard, even though you could argue, you know, the ECB and the Fed act as some sort of guarantor of currencies, and they act as some sort of mini gold standard in the sense of other currencies and other economies look to them to see what they're doing first. But there is no gold standard, therefore the creation of money doesn't rely on having gold in the bank. You know, there's no link between the two things. Then why the fuck are nation states so obsessed with having their bank vaults stocked and stocked with gold bars if it doesn't really have any role in the modern economy, apart from your possession of it and its actual innate value? You know what I mean? Why are nation states obsessed with gold? Is it because of the fear of having to go back to a gold standard?
It's a very good question, and I think you need to look at this in terms of the recent increase in the price of gold. Let's give some little bit of perspective here. So I'd like to go ahead and quote figures, but we need to understand this. The price of gold today, 8:30 a.m. Eastern Time, 2,389 ounce, yeah? The low over the last year has been $1,991. Year-on-year, gold's up 16.5%. Now, steel is currently about 465.66 per metric ton. Yeah, silver about $28 per ounce. Gold is going crazy. And this is largely down to central bank purchases, particularly China. We said we would talk about this a little bit later, but we need to actually mention this. Now, the Chinese have dropped their treasury holdings 40% from 9 years ago. They own less than $780 billion.
When you say, just so everyone knows, people don't know this, treasury holdings, you mean their U.S. treasury holdings, their ownership of U.S. debt?
Yeah, absolutely. U.S. Treasury bills, which are basically what the American government issues to raise money. Sorry. And 17 successive straight months in which the Chinese have bought gold. Now, Vietnam's an interesting example here, small currency, but Vietnamese have brought gold as security for raising money on the international financial markets in order to avoid default. If you have gold, it gives you a little backup.
Oh, right. Now, so gold is basically collateral for doing things internationally then, because people can trust it. So, well, if your currency plummets, you can still pay us back in gold.
You got a little bit of gold there, so you still got some backup, and people like that. Now, again, what's fascinating at the moment, we'll talk about the gold revaluation account thing in a minute. It's quite complicated, but it's very interesting what's happening there. One of the reasons why central banks are increasing the gold supply is uncertainty. When you look at the surveys of the central banks who've increased the gold, very few have said that the potential of moving away from the dollar and making the gold the basis of a new currency or of a new international trading standard, that doesn't arise there whatsoever. People are very anxious at the moment. In the 1970s, gold began to have a bit of a resurgence, but 1980, I wasn't at the time, but my merchant bank, Kleinwort Benson, had a little gold bullion dealer called Sharps Pixley. Sharps made a respectable sum every year. 1980, you had the Iranian Revolution and you had the Russians invading Afghanistan. Everything went tits up, everything collapsed, including the dollar. Gold went fucking massive. So Sharps, who'd made a few thousand every year, made something like 20 million in 1 year in 1980.
So the point you're making is that gold goes up in times of geopolitical tension and stress and conflict because people look for some sort of safe haven for their economy, I suppose. And gold, I suppose, remains a safe haven. As you said, it's a highly kind of liquid asset. You can literally move it about. There's no liability attached to it. There's no credit risk attached to it. It's, as you said at the start, it's scarce. Therefore, it's valuable. And it preserves its value historically over time. So I suppose if you're worried about the nature of the economy and you're gonna buy gold, is that really what's happening here? Is it fear? Is it a sign of fear in the international community?
I think it's the ultimate safe haven, though. As an investment, you have to look over it as an inflation hedge in the very long term. But right now, we have an election coming up in the States, which one way or the other is going to go tits up. Neither side is going to accept defeat. There's going to be big problems afterwards. That's a major potential source of global breakdown. And if the dollar goes massively tits up, it will be good to have some gold on you. This last happened in 1980. Normally, the dollar is where you go to if things go wrong. I held some dollars for quite a long time in anticipation of something going deeply wrong in the UK. Liz Truss gave us that. And so I sold them all whenever it went down to virtual parity. Yeah, so I don't have any dollars anymore. I'm actually thinking of buying some gold, right? Because at the moment, I think...
Can you buy some for me, mate? I mean, I'll pay you back.
At some point, I shall buy some gold for you, but it's a very long-term bet. Yeah. So I went to Sharps Pixley, who still have a little shop, and very busy. Interesting with gold, no VAT, no capital gains tax. It's a nice little earner. Silver you pay VAT on, I think partly because silver has more industrial uses. But gold is a pretty good bet right now. And I'm actually thinking of putting some money in because it's only going to rise, I think, between now and the US election. Also with US interest rates coming down, that again makes gold a bit more practical as well. I do wonder, in all seriousness, just how high gold would be if it hadn't been for the rise of Bitcoin over the last 6 months or so. Okay. This is something, again, people are using as a hedge. And sorry to go on about this, but it's important that people understand there is a certain level of irrationality in the way people actually invest. Bitcoin is a particular example, perhaps, though. Maybe we'll wait and see. They say you need to have a blended portfolio, say 50% equity, 40% fixed income, US and other bonds, and maybe about 10% other stuff. When you look over the last 130 years, as a recent survey did, the portfolios that would have performed the best, those that are a blend of international and domestic equities, because with equities, you get dividends. So equities are always going to be, over the long term, the best return. But people get more emotional about actually losing money than about not having made as much as they could do. So this is why gold is important and why someone like me, I know all this. I know that over the long term, I'm safer off with equities if I'm going to invest. Gold is a very good sort of hedge. And right now...
Well, I think you made the point before when you said that, I can't remember who you said it was, some English geezer had a kind of religious veneration for gold. It's fascinating to me that it still holds that, has that hold over us and has done for thousands of years. And of course, the big story, the big message, I think, from this little podcast is that story, the reason why gold is going through the roof, the reason why China has got more gold reserves now or buying more gold than these US treasuries and US debt, is that genuine fear of global instability, both economically and militarily and politically and everything else. So that's really the story of the day, folks. If you've got a few quid, Stuart's advise you to buy a few gold ingots. I've got fuck all. I'm just going to stock up on tins of beans and, and maybe buy a fucking Sean or shotgun. That's going to be my future, I think.
Oh, well, I've got the weaponry sorted out already. But the gold will be handy. And again, gold is very, very liquid. and of course,
you can use it. Yeah, keep it on the move. All right, Stuart, that was fascinating. Thanks so much for giving us your input today. And we could talk more. I know there's not a lot more to say about gold and its uses and its role in the economy, but that gives us an idea. And it's a really interesting thing for people to think about, the idea that gold going through the roof is a signal for economic and global instability. That's the good news for today, folks. Thanks for listening. Don't forget to check out leftblock.ie for the other four podcasts that exist on there. There's North, a podcast about the relationships between the people on these islands, on this island in particular. There's The Week at Work. There's Newell and Old, for those of you with Irish Gaeliger. And of course, there's the ABCs of Green Politics. Stuart, thanks for coming on the Trademark Belfast podcast once again.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.
And we'll see you all soon.
That, comrades, was Trademark Belfast. Thanks so much for listening in. We'll see you soon, either in the trenches or on the victory parade. Up the workers and Slán go fóill.